principal. Well, they wouldn't let him start off being a principal since he's in a new place. You got to start at the bottom and work up. And then he had real estate office. He was a real estate broker, too.
Oh, what year was this?
I met him in 1956. And so he was very prosperous and very nice and congenial, highly educated, and everybody thought he was a very nice catch. And so when he decided to marry me, I figured that was a good catch. So I was naturally thrilled, you know.
And when were you married?
64. We married in
64.
Yeah. Because, see, it took him about 3 years to get his divorce settled. They were fighting each other back and forth in court. So it took him about 3 years to get that settled. Then naturally, after he got the divorce, he didn't want to jump right back into fire. He just got out of fire. He didn't want to jump right back into it, you know. And by that time, he figured he had me figured out by then that I wasn't marrying him for what he had. You know, some people would think, well, you're marrying him for what they have, you know.
Well, you were established on your own.
Yeah, I was well established myself. Yeah. That's another thing he liked too. And also, I was the economical type, and that's what he admired most in me, he said. First time he came over to see me, first time I had him over for dinner, I cut the napkin in half. I have a habit. When I buy these big napkins, I would cut them in half. I say, I don't need to use a big napkin like this. And I had my napkins in a drawer all cut in half. And so I picked up one of them and served him with it. Unconsciously, I wasn't thinking about the economic part of it at that time. I just unconsciously did it, you know. So when he realized that, he thought that was the cutest thing. He said, I said, when I realized I'd given him half a napkin, I said, oh, I'm sorry, I gave you half a napkin. Oh, that's all right, he said. And then I told him why I cut him in half, you know. And he just laughed. He thought that was so cute. He said, I'm economical, but I think you got me beat. And he said, let me see your vacuum cleaner. And I my broom closet was in the kitchen. This was in my new home. And I opened the door and showed him the vacuum cleaner. I had the cord wrapped around the vacuum cleaner like he's supposed to do it, you know. He said, most women, they just throw the cord over there. They don't take time to wrap it around there like you got it. So he got the impression that I was a neat person, you know, from that, just from that. Now, he'd already seen how I kept house, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, the house wasn't all that clean, but it was in order, you know. But anyway, he was testing me on that, I guess, because I didn't know why he wanted to see it, but I had nothing to hide, so I showed it to him. So
where did you live then, after you were married?
That same house.
Oh,
the house that I had built. Yeah, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And when did you move here?
I moved here in, let's see, 82. 82 in this house. So I've been here 10 years.
Mm-hmm. You told me that you went back to school to go get your degree in college.
Now that's when I married Mr. Williams. You see, he was, so right after I married him, you know, he'd be talking about things. I didn't know what he was talking about. But yet he knew I hadn't finished school. He wasn't marrying me for my education. And he was marrying me for my personality. So I said, I didn't say it to him. I said to myself, I think I need to go back to school. Because sometimes he'd be talking something. I didn't know what he's talking about. I didn't want to ask him. And then sometimes I'd blab it out and ask him. And he would tell me. He had patience. He'd tell me and he'd laugh. And so I decided I want to go back to college. So I asked him, was that all right with him if I went? He said, yeah, it's all right if you want to go. Lots of studying, though, he said. So I went and enrolled at City College. And it took me 3 years to get my degree, AA degree. I got AA degree. But I stuck it out till I got that degree.
What was your major?
Home economics. It's a funny thing. When my first husband died, I hadn't finished high school. And I went back to finish high school, and this teacher, I mean the counselor, advised me to take home economics. But I wouldn't take it at that time because at that time the white counselors would only suggest that you take that. They said, you shouldn't take college preparatory courses. You don't need to go to college because you can't get a job doing anything else but housework anyway. And invariably, she would advise all the colored kids to take, colored girls to take home economics. So I had a resentment there. And I didn't want to take it just because she said I should take it. Because she had in her mind and my mind too, well, if I take home economics, the only thing I can do is get work in that line. And so I refused to take it. I took a college preparatory course. It's good that I did. Otherwise, I might not have been able to get into City College. But when I got into City College, you had to choose what you want to major in. Then I looked at all the things, and at my age, well, I wasn't planning on making a career to get a job because I was already established in real estate. But I just wanted to better myself, and I found out, well, home economics was the best course to take to make a good housewife. And right now I would suggest that all girls take that course, but not just because they're just going to get a job in that field, but because it makes them a better housewife. And it really has made me a better housewife because I really realize how important it is to give your family proper foods and to be clean about it. You know, cleanliness is next to godliness. And some people know how to cook, but they're not clean enough. Or some people's house, I don't want to eat at their house because they're not clean enough for me. And see, you take that course that teaches you how to be clean and to fix foods properly, not to overcook it. Because my mother had that fault, overcooking the food. I didn't like my mother's food because she cooked the food too long. Well, you cook it so long, it's dead food, you know. So I learned a lot by taking that, by majoring in that. And I'm so glad that I woke up and found out. And my husband appreciated me more, too, because he used to compliment me on the meals, nice meals that I would make, you know. And it doesn't have to be expensive food, either. You can take inexpensive food and make it look attractive and delicious and enjoyable and nutritious and all that, you know. So that's what I majored in, home economics. And that included sewing. So I learned how to, I had already taken sewing in high school too. But when I was in college, I continued taking it. And so that really helped me because right now I can go downtown and buy a dress that's too small or too large. If it's on sale, I watch for sales. And if I can see where by knowing how to sew, I can see how I can alter the dress. And I save lots of money like that by buying things on sale. Because you can't always find something to fit you that's on sale.
Okay. What have been your greatest successes in your life?
Greatest success?
Yeah. It doesn't have to be just one.
Dealing with people. Selling real estate.
And that's a theme also through your whole life, your gift for selling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a natural born salesman. I found that out about myself. Yeah, I'm a natural born, and then other people have told me that too. If I've sold on something, I can sell you on it. Mm-hmm. But I have to first be sold on it myself because I'm an honest person. I wouldn't try to say something if I know it's no good, you know. If I knew it was no good and you wanted to buy it, I'd tell you it was no good and tell you how you can improve on it. Like if I had a house that was had a poor foundation, that's the first thing I'd show the person. I say, now this house needs a new foundation, but you can have one done for so and so much, you know. And that's why they're selling it so cheap, because the foundation is bad. You got to have a new foundation put under it.
Yeah.
Or you need a new roof. I show the bad points first, and that way they had confidence in me because they figure I'm not trying to hide anything. And so there's always a way to improve on things, you know, because everything's not going to be perfect. Even a dress, you buy a perfect new dress and there's something going to be wrong. We might have to have a halt or something.
What have been your greatest disappointments?
My husband died.
Arthur?
Mm-hmm. And Virgil, too. Virgil, my last husband. He had a heart attack at 4 o'clock in the morning. And 4 o'clock one morning. And then, like on Tuesday morning, 4 o'clock, he had a heart attack. Tuesday night, 12:01, he died. Well, that would be considered the next day because it's after 12, you know. But it looked like it was in the same day to me, but they dated it another day. And that was a disappointment because he just had this massive heart attack and died.
When was that?
1977. Let me see now. And of course, when my father died, my father had cancer. That was very heartbreaking when he died, because he suffered so much. They hadn't found a, well, they still haven't really found the cure for it, but they can help you much more now. Well, I guess they have found a cure for it, because some people have gotten over it. But my dad, he suffered a lot. And then another thing, too, let me see now. Well, I don't know. Lots of, so many disappointments I've had in life. But they don't stay with me. I forget about them because Papa always said, don't stand there and worry about spilt milk. Get busy and clean it up and go get some more. And that's the way I looked at disappointments in life, because we're all going to have some disappointments. Life is not perfect. And something happens, well, just don't sit and start worrying about it. Just get busy and try to do the next best thing, you know. That's the way I look at life.
And that's what you've done.
And also, I don't hold in my any malice in my heart for mean things that people have done to my dad. I sometimes I cry. I think about the things that were done to him, you know, because he tried so hard in his little way to break down the segregation. But see, he was dead before all this came about, before we got our, before the restrictions were broken down, you know, like they are now.
And now it even continues into the present situation. I mean, we don't have the restrictive housing code anymore, but we have the Rodney King verdict.
Yeah, that was bad.
Present. I wanted to ask you, that's kind of where I wanted to end up, was to end up right now in the present and ask you what your experience was over the recent rebellion over the Rodney King verdict.
Very sad. When I went up here with the thrifted drugstore is, you know, and a Boris Bargain, I just did not cry. It was so heartbreaking. Over here, the Sumitomo Bank, that's right in my front door, they burned all those places down. The little dynasty restaurant, I think Koreans must have been running that. They burned that down. And I used to love to go in there and eat. And right here on Bronson, there was one of those apartments called Fire. The fire was right in my front yard. And it looked like the blaze was going to blow over here on our house. We had to evacuate our houses for 3 hours because they were afraid the gas was going to explode. And
where did you go?
Well, I went to a lady's house over on Roxton, about 5 blocks away. One of my neighbors, 2 doors down, she has a sister who lives over there. So we went to her house, and we stayed about 3 hours. And we came back. Nothing didn't explode because the fire department got here. But they were so long coming, they were afraid that the fire was going to cause the gas to explode. And I went over on the east side, and a man that was having a... Oh, and my son, he lost a cigarette machine. No, a jukebox. He has jukeboxes. That's his sideline. He has jukeboxes in places of business. And he had one in the Golden Bird chicken place. He had a jukebox in there. They went in there, the one on Adams, broke up everything in there, including my son's jukebox. And my son has an income tax office on King Boulevard near 3rd Avenue. It's right at 3rd Avenue and King. And they broke in his place, but that was after the riot. They broke in his place and stole some stuff. They didn't set it on fire because he had signed that black owned. I think that might have helped. I don't know. And he has a Korean tenant because, see, he owns the whole lot, and he built his little office at one end of the lot, and the hamburgers, it's a little fast food stand is there on part, and then they have parking on the other part. But his tenant is a Korean, and they're very nice people, too. And so they didn't bother their places, but they did break in and steal stuff, you know, but they didn't set it on fire. But so my son, he lost quite a bit there. But anyway, I went on the east side where I was dealing with a man to some bars. I was having some bars put up on a house that I was selling out in Watts area. And so the place right across the street from this bar business was a liquor store and a grocery store combined. And they had burned that down. Oh, that was so sad. And then the little place here over near USC where I used to get my Xeroxing done, it was a little shopping mall, and the Xerox places where I used to go. And all that was burned. Oh, it just broke my heart. I said, they're just cutting off their nose to spite their face, really. Now, those type of people that start that, that's the only way they know, I guess, to get attention. They call themselves getting attention, I guess. Because, of course, it was unfair. The verdict was unfair. But I don't see why they felt they had to do all that just because it was an unfair verdict. And I sort of believe in the Bible. God says, vengeance is mine. And he'll get these people. So, but you have to have the patience, though. And I guess these young people, they say, well, we're tired of waiting. But it's just so sad, I'm telling you. And they cut out lots of jobs, you know, by doing what they did. And lots of people can't walk to stores, and they don't have cars to go to stores. They burn down the little neighborhood grocery stores. And so it's just really sad, I'm telling you. I just cried. I can't even talk about it, Holly, without crying, because it's just so sad. And when you try to reason with some of these people, I haven't talked directly to anyone who actually did it, but I talked to some people out in Watts that stole the doors off the house that I had that I'm selling. I had bars, the owner had bars put up and metal doors, and they went there and stole the metal doors off the house. They didn't take the bars, but they stole the metal doors. They wanted sure, so we can still get in the house if we want to. And so I said, and the man that I suspect that had something to do with it, I was talking to him about it. And he gets mad. I'm trying to talk to him about it, and he gets mad because I'm talking about it. And says, I'm falsely accusing him. I said, well, you acted so strange because the lady who owned the house was paying him to watch her house. And when we went out there and the doors were gone, we couldn't find him anyplace. He avoided us for 2 days. Well, wouldn't that make you think that he had something to do with it? You're paying him to watch the house. And then when it happens, he's nowhere to be found. And we knew where he lived. We went to his house. He lived right around the corner from now. And somebody came to the door and said he wasn't home. And I believe they were lying. I believe he was home. He was just dodging us. I felt he had a guilty complex. I said, the reason I think you had something to do with those doors being gone because somebody told me that you were trying to sell some metal doors. I said, now why would you be trying to sell some metal door? I said, I started to tell him the lady was paying you to watch the house, so he cut off his nose to spite his face, because she certainly didn't keep him. I wouldn't let her keep him anymore. I said, you get rid of him. I didn't want her to have him in the first place, but she was afraid. She said, well, I'm afraid that if I don't pay him to watch it, he might go in there and do something. But he went on. I think he did it anyway. I think he had something to do with it. And a stolen car got put up in her driveway, because the house was vacant, you see. And somebody took a stolen car up there and ripped it off. I mean, stripped it. And I'm pretty sure he was in on that. Because that day we went out there and saw the car there, he comes rushing out. Oh, so-and-so put that car there. I'm going to make her move it. And it's still there. It hasn't been moved yet. So when I asked him about it, I said, I thought you were going to make old so-and-so move that car. I didn't tell you that. He's one of those old ignorant guys that no education, don't want to learn nothing, don't want to listen. So I think people need to be more educated. Make them go to school, because some of them don't want to go to school and they don't make them go. They ought to make them go.
What do you think will happen now that so many things have been destroyed? What are you thinking about, or what are people that you know thinking about rebuilding and starting again?
Well, lots of people are chipping in to help. That's one good consolation. We're all pitching in to help, because, you know, right after, there's lots of volunteer that service to go and help clean up, and I was glad to see that. And we've been giving away food at our church for the people who burn out of their homes, and the grocery stores are gone, you know, the neighborhood grocery stores are gone. And so I've been helping with that, helping to sack up the food. And then I took some food to two families that I knew that needed it, but I didn't know any more, so they're supposed to come to the church and get the food. And so everybody, they seem to be changing their attitude. People are friendlier toward each other. Before, they act like you didn't exist. Now they do notice you, and they want to be more friendly, it seems like.
Who's they?
The other races, the white races, uh-huh. White people. Okay. I notice they are more friendly toward the blacks now. I notice that when I'm out. And the blacks are more friendly, too. You know, those of us who think it was terrible for the blacks to do what they did, well, they're getting to be more friendly too, with the other people, you know. Of course, naturally, the blacks were mad at the Mexicans for coming in, taking their jobs, you know. But so many of the blacks don't want to work. I sort of blame them. I try to tell them that lots of time. Like, we used to have lots of black waiters and waitresses in places of business, and now it's mostly foreigners, you know. Because the people used to say, well, we can't depend on the blacks. They got so they don't want their job. They want better jobs, you know. And so the Mexicans would come in and take it. Now the blacks are saying the Mexicans are taking their jobs. Well, they didn't want them in the first place, because they said they could make more being on the county and on welfare than they could taking those little meager jobs, you know. And I guess welfare has lots to do with it, too. Maybe they shouldn't be giving them so much. I don't really know exactly what's going to solve the problem. But I do know the attitude is getting better, and we should all change and help each other. Because it's a sad world. And that's one reason my grandson moved away from here. He didn't want his children to have to go to school with some of the kids that they had to go to school with. He says too much drugs on the school grounds, you know.
Where did he move to?
Palmdale. They moved to Palmdale. But my daughter-in-law, she wouldn't let her kids go to school by themselves. She'd take them to school. Those that couldn't be bused, and one of them, he gets to go on the bus. But those that didn't get bused, she'd take them to school and go back and pick up. One had to go to Santa Monica because he was handicapped. He's partially sighted. So all schools didn't have the equipment for him to go to. So the nearest school to them for him to go to was in Santa Monica. So he couldn't be bused way out there. So she had to take him every day and then go back and get him. But now also one went to John Burr's junior high school. So she took him because she didn't want him have to ride the public transportation with these bad kids that, you know, shoot each other on the buses and cut each other and exchanging drugs and all that kind of stuff. She didn't want them to be exposed to that. So she just, well, she just, lucky she didn't have to work because my son made enough income for her not to work. So she was available to take her. But most people not available and can't afford to take their children to school. They have to let them go, you know, publicly. But those who can, they just don't mix in. They just try not to let the kids mix in with these bad kids, as they call them. So it really makes a big difference. So I just pray for guidance and for protection, because God says He will protect you and He will provide if you believe in Him.
Okay, thank you very much, Verna.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, I think we got through a lot of material.
We surely did, huh? And I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Me too.